Wednesday House Call is presented by Robillard Hearing Centers. Hearingisbelieving.com.
CFRA.
Maybe your life has been for nothing, but your death has made us filthy rich.
Where'd you guys get all this?
Well, remember back in high school when you weren't in the greatest shape and you ran that 4-hour mile? Well, some friends would have encouraged you to eat healthier and exercise, but we decided to keep our mouths shut and take out a life insurance policy on you.
It's ghost sickness.
Ghost sickness?
Yeah.
God, no.
Yeah. I don't even know what that is.
But it might be fun to be a doctor, don't you think?
Why does a doctor need that little office for, anyway? There's books, little stupid aquarium. I guess he doesn't want people to see him looking stuff up. What the hell was that? That was kind of gross. That wasn't the tube or the circle.
Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's time for the Wednesday House Call, and the phone lines are open right now at 521-TALK, 521-8255, star 580 on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-580-CFRA if you have any health-related questions. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's get into the big local health story of the week. It was a report that was released on Monday calling for widespread changes in order to curb childhood obesity. And according to Alex Munter, who was part of this panel from Ottawa Public Health, the CEO of CHEO, all of the elements have to be adopted in order for any of this to be effective. He says childhood obesity has reached a tipping point. Here's what he said with CFRA News this week.
First of all, we listen first and foremost to parents. What did parents who want nothing more than the health and happiness of their kids, what did they tell us they needed, and what supports did they want to see? We looked at the initiatives that were already underway, but that, as you say, are kind of uneven and aren't reaching everybody. And we're looking for those places where there's good momentum to make a difference. And, you know, no question, you can pull out any one idea in the report and say, this idea won't end childhood obesity. And you'd be right. No single idea can. And that's why we've put together a comprehensive strategy with those three elements of focus of giving kids the best start in life, changing the food environment, and creating healthy communities. They're focused on making healthy choices. They're focused on nutrition for their kids. But they often find that they're battling the marketing machine of these huge multinational corporations. And so we have talked about making sure that kids under 12 aren't targeted by marketing, that families can go to the grocery store without feeling that they've been marketed at, that when families go to the restaurant, they can see the nutritional information. So those are all things that we think should be legislated. Many retailers, many restaurants, many manufacturers are already doing these things, but it's uneven, and we think a level playing field that doesn't penalize the socially responsible companies for being socially responsible is really important. We are at a tipping point where we can still make a difference. So if you don't like these ideas, wait until you see the much broader taxation and regulatory measures that government will be forced into if we don't change the trajectory, if we don't change path now. So I feel very optimistic that this mix of feasible, doable, reasonable items, most of which are already underway in some degree or another, all of which parents told us that they were looking for, and all of which are backed by evidence and experience in other jurisdictions, I'm confident that this can have a positive impact and reduce obesity by 20% over the next 5 years if they are all implemented.
All or nothing, says Alex Munter, CEO of CHEO. So among the recommendations is ban on advertising that targets children,
right, and
calorie listings on restaurant menus.
And they're not banning foods. It's the advertising. So I think people...
The marketing of it,
but they're not banning a food.
Calorie listings for restaurant menus, an emphasis on physical fitness. What do you think about these ideas?
Well, it is in terms of addressing the problem, I mean, we've talked about this before, Rob, about the obesity problem is not one factor. It's not just not enough exercise. It's not the food per se. It's the environment that we find ourselves in. The marketing is a big aspect to it. The incorporation of what we would have determined to be not a normal lifestyle or choice 20 or 30 years ago now is considered to be normal. You have weight issues that when you look at certain communities where someone who, when you walk into that community and you say, you know, these are a lot of people that seem to be quite overweight, those people don't see themselves as overweight because everybody around them looks the same. And so you have that change in what is considered to be normal. So you have a lot of factors that are involved in this situation. And what this report tried to do was to address each of those factors and provide a solution to them in a way that reverses the trend over time. And because we're focusing on children who really don't have a choice per se about the foods that they eat, especially when they're young, but are subjected to pressures at school, pizza days and treats and at sports arenas. And I remember we looked at that Coca-Cola ad, and it was an ad where they superimposed themselves on increasing exercise and weight loss from Coca-Cola, right? And all their products. So you have this insertion into society of aspects of lifestyle and eating and consumption that really does not benefit people in terms of their health. That being said, adults choose what they want to do. Children do not. Adults usually decide for them. Parents decide for their children up to a point about what they can do to help them out. But when a parent is subjected and the children are subjected to advertising 24 hours where you have pressures to be the parent that says no when every other child is having pizza that day, for example, it makes it very difficult to say no all the time. Granted that parents make the decision, but it's not just the parents that, you know, you can't blame the parents per se for a situation that involves all of society. So overall, this report with regards to banning the advertising, it's a solution, but I don't think it's going to work in terms of doing that alone. And even if you add on everything
But what Alex Munter is saying, he admits that.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to defeat the scourge of childhood obesity. We're 1 in 3 children under the age of 12 in the province, 1 in 3 are
overweight or obese.
Overweight or obese.
Yeah.
So he admits, you know, if we ban Nutella commercials from television, no, that's not going to do it. But if we ban Nutella commercials and we start listing the calorie content when people go to restaurants and we encourage more people to engage in physical fitness, we might get somewhere.
Yeah, it's a step-by-step approach. The problem with the banning is how do you define unhealthy food? Some things may be very obvious. Other things may not be. And companies are very well aware of this. So say you set the bar, Rob, for what you consider or define as an unhealthy food, they'll make a tweak or change it so that it just comes in under that bar so that they can still sell it. And that's, you see that today where they'll do that with certain foods. So you have to be careful because if you're going to ban the advertising, they're going to find ways to get around it and they're going to find ways to still promote their product. So that's an issue in and of itself. Advertising to children anyway, I consider to be relatively immoral because children can't make decisions like adults do, especially children under the age of 12. And so when you're advertising things that when you see on Saturdays for children's cartoons and such, and you see those advertisements directed at children, children can't make the decisions on whether a product's good or not.
Happy Meal.
Yeah.
With toys in the Happy Meal.
Right.
Right?
And you get a child that says, I want to have
sure,
that Happy Meal.
Sure, you want
that
toy. Who doesn't want a Happy Meal?
Yeah.
Right?
So you're marketing directly to a child that really doesn't know the nuances of the advertising. And so that's where the parents have to say no. But they're bombarded with this all the time. And so it becomes, again, it's a societal issue. It is not the individual all the time saying no, 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 no. If that individual is in a sea of everything that's saying yes, 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 it becomes very difficult. And that's what we're in right now. Walk down any street downtown or your local neighborhood and see how many restaurants and fast food outlets and coffee houses and the like that are around, the grocery stores, which display prominently processed foods at right at eye level, or for children lower down on the shelf so that they can see all the cereal boxes and all the cartoon characters. There is a purpose to that. And it makes it very difficult when you're a parent and you have a child asking you over and over and over again, you say no and no and no and no. Right. It still is exhausting.
I mean, when you go to the grocery store, when you go to the grocery store, for example, and you walk down the cereal aisle, I've noticed this. When you walk down the cereal aisle, the high fiber, more healthy cereal, shredded wheat, for example,
is not at eye level.
It's on the top.
Yeah.
Right? The Mueslix would be on the top.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chocolicious Corn Pops are at knee level.
Right.
Right?
For the kids
to
see.
Of course, that's on purpose.
Yeah. And,
right?
And in fact, the companies that produce these products pay for that space in the grocery store. So,
yeah.
So it's all marketing, and it's marketing to children. I don't believe that is ethical to market to children that way.
Yeah. It seems one of the big problems is. And let's face it, it's hard and it's expensive to eat healthy. It's more expensive to eat healthy.
It can be. It depends.
I don't think there's any question.
I think part of it. I think part of it is if you more than 50% of the time now we don't make our own meals at home, so it actually costs you more in some ways. If you were to, for example, go and buy, it's a good example. You buy a chicken. A barbecue chicken with a salad for a family of four, if you do that at the grocery store, and they make the barbecue chickens, right? It's just barbecue chicken. That's all it is.
Yep.
And you get a salad for $3. You can buy a bag of salad and some dressing. For $20, you can serve a family of four or more. That's $5 each, which is less than what it would cost to go to a restaurant. And you have actually reasonably good food. So it depends on what you buy, right? And so,
but I mean, if you want to go buy boneless chicken breast, or high quality pork or beef steak, fresh vegetables. I mean, I was in the grocery store the other day. I bought one onion. It was $1.30 for one onion. You know, if you're trying to cook a home style meal using fresh ingredients from the grocery store, it's expensive, especially if you have a family. I mean, why not go buy just a big can of sodium-laced chunky soup?
Yeah, and again, it comes down to being smart about what you buy. At a grocery store, you can get a 2-pound bag of onions for 99 cents. If you want to buy the big red onion or the big Spanish onion, it's going to be more. But again, depends on what you want to do with it. We make bread at home, for example. I made bagels. I have a bagel recipe. 50 cents for the flour and the ingredients. It was about 50 cents to make about 18 bagels. Go to a bagel shop, it's $8.50 for a dozen, right? So it really is a matter of, I think it boils down to helping people understand what they can buy that's healthful for them and reduce the cost, because it is possible. You're right that it can be expensive, but it may be a bit expensive in the short term, but it's much more expensive long term health-wise for people that don't eat very well.
Okay. Very quick, Joan and Elmer, what's your question for Dr. Dworkin, Joan? Oh, Joan's not there. We'll get to Joan after the news on CFRA. Joan, if you want to hang on the line. And Nellie and Russell, we'll get to your call as well after the news on 580 CFRA. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It is the Wednesday House Call.
Back to school means back to busy mornings. That's why I got them Pillsbury Toaster Strudel. Warm, flaky pastry with delicious, sweet filling my kids will love. Plus, I get 2 bonus box tops for their school. Toaster Strudel, the one kids want to eat. Back to school means back from school hungry. So I always have Totino's Pizza Rolls. Big pizza taste and a bite-sized roll that my kids can't resist. Plus, I get 2 bonus box tops for their school. Totino's Pizza Rolls, the pizza way to snack.
Bye, Mom!
Bye, sweetie, you'll do great!
This is it!
A new school year has so much potential.
Hey, any resolutions?
My resolution is the same as always. Keep her full and focused with my fiber.
3, 2, 1, happy school year!
This school year, make a resolution to give your kid Kellogg's Frosted Mini Wheat Cereal, an excellent source of fiber from 100% whole grain that helps keep them full so they can focus on the day ahead.
Keeps them full, keeps them focused.
Breakfast in this house? In the morning, I can use all the help I can get. That's why I love Nutella, a delicious hazelnut spread that's perfect on multigrain toast and even whole wheat waffles. It's a quick and easy way to give my family a breakfast they'll want to eat. And Nutella is made with simple quality ingredients like hazelnuts, skim milk, and a hint of cocoa. They love the taste, and I feel good that they're ready to tackle the day. Nutella, breakfast never tasted this good.
Here's the Secret Service box.
Just like a rocket power.
Dude, where are the weights?
I can't serve this.
Damn, crunch!
Somebody say Rocket Power Crunchy Dice. Here's Rocket Power Crunch Berries.
Look, Veggie and Otta.
And Bodacious Berries.
They're turning blue.
The milk is too.
Whoa, it's out of control.
Tasty weights.
These Crunch Berries are the totally rad part of this good breakfast.
They are diabolical marketing geniuses, aren't they, Dr. Barry Dworkin? The Nutella ad is unbelievable. You would swear Nutella was just the healthiest food out there.
There is a science behind how they market these things.
Oh, I bet.
Absolutely.
You there is. Yeah. If you have any health-related questions, folks, at 521-TALK, *580, 1-800-580-CFRA. We have plenty of phone lines available. And let's go back to Joan in Elmer. Joan.
Hi.
Hi, Joan.
Sorry about that last time.
That's
before
okay.
The break.
Yeah.
I've been taking a Doppler for my carotid artery for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor, with the vascular surgeon, is saying 70% or plus. And this time he said, yeah, it's a bit more. And I said, how much? And he said 80 to 85.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's recommended that I, instead of taking a coated aspirin, that I take something that's better for the stenosis.
Right.
And he would like me to join, or ask me to join, if I wish, a double blind study on to compare ticagrelor with clopidogrel.
So two different types of sort of anticoagulant type of medications that prevent clots.
Yes. And I'm just wondering what do you think about being in a study as opposed to just simply take. My GP has already given me a prescription for, I believe it's the clopidogrel.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's been on the market for a while.
Right. Well, I think both of them are on the market. I think I'm not clear what they're trying to show with this particular study, if it's just to see which one has a better outcome.
To compare
treatment
on the risk of cardiovascular death.
Right.
Myocardial infarction and ischemic stroke.
Right.
Well,
this is a matter of deciding whether you want to just continue with the standard therapy, that is to stick with what is done right now in terms of standard of care and go with that, or end up in a study where you'll either be randomized, I guess, to one or the other medication. So you may still end up on that same medication or you may not.
Yes.
And if they're trying to end...
I'm not on medication. I just take a coated aspirin.
Right. But ultimately, you've already been prescribed the new one to start.
Right.
And you would probably be randomized either to one or the other in this particular study.
Mm-hmm. No placebo.
No.
You don't know which one you take.
Yeah, it's unethical to use placebo in that situation.
Yes, right.
It's a matter of comfort level, whether you, you know, they have to explain all the risks to you, the risks of being on one versus the other. I know that in the study, they'll probably be following you more closely. They'll be doing more scans and follow up because they're trying to answer a specific question.
Right.
But really, it boils down to whether you want to stick with the standard of care approach or whether you want to try the study. But again, with this study, ideally you would want to know whether there is a potential benefit to using the other medication. So that way, if you happen to be randomized to the other one, you're not being put at a disadvantage. So that is, do they have evidence to date that using one of them, the one that you're not being prescribed, that using that seems to be better? And if that's the case, then going into this study, they're trying to answer the question to see really if it is better. But, you know, when you've got an end artery, when you have a carotid artery stenosis, you have a blockage, it's a relatively serious thing to have. And, you know, I would, my own personal view is I'm not one to get into studies when it comes to situations like that. I would rather stick with the standard of care where it is a known outcome at least, and they know there is the effects of the medication under those circumstances. But that's just me, right? So it depends on a person's risk tolerance, as it were, of whether they want to go into a study or not.
Because you don't have a choice.
When you're in the study, that's right. You don't have a choice. You're randomized. No one knows what you're taking.
Right.
No, the person that's giving you the medication doesn't know. You don't know. So it's double blinded. So there's no idea of what's going to, you know,
that's right.
Whether
it's
you're
a
taking
double blind.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to ask you that.
Sure.
And, before I made up my mind,
okay.
What to do.
Sure.
I was thinking that being in the study, I would get more attention, but
you probably,
I do have a wonderful GP who gives me lots of good attention.
Yeah, that's
when
good.
I need it.
That's good. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, usually in the studies, they do have more follow-up, but that's because it's a study situation. It's an artificial situation, and it's not funded by OHIP, right? It's usually privately funded.
That's right.
So
and you wouldn't pay for the medicine.
So you're not paying for the medicine, and
yeah.
and OHIP is not paying for the testing and all the other follow-up. So it's outside of OHIP.
Yes.
But nevertheless, again, for treating this, there is a set protocol for treating carotid stenosis. And if it's being followed, I mean, and it's a standard of care, you can't go wrong that way either.
You mean with my GP and my vascular surgeon?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you. Thank you very
Bye-bye.
Much.
Thank you for your call, Joan, and good luck. We've taken a few calls from Joan mm-hmm. and with some of her issues. We're just waiting to get our next caller on the line. Just be patient here. It is Margaret. Margaret.
Hello?
Yes, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hello?
Margaret, you're on the air.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yep.
Dr. Dworkin?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a fracture this winter, my wrist.
Okay.
And I've been hearing about complex regional pain syndrome.
Yes.
After a fracture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, how old am I? I'm 73. I've done a lot of research on it, but I don't really find, I'd like to know what you have to say about it, and I'll just hang up and listen to you.
Well, I mean, complex regional pain syndrome is similar to what we call RDS. It's RSD. It's a regional sympathetic dystrophy. It's a chronic pain condition where the nerves themselves, when you have injury or trauma to an area of the body, the nerves as they heal up get short-circuited, and you end up with these chronic pain syndromes that really are difficult to try to correct. So usually, again, it's characterized by, you know, pain and swelling in the area that's been damaged. There's, again, with the wrist, there's limited range of motion. The bones can be injured. That is, the bones can become, you get less mineralization in the bone, less calcium in the bone itself. And again, it's also known, again, as I mentioned, as reflex sympathetic dystrophy. And the treatments for it really are more in terms of managing the pain. There's no way to correct the anatomy of the damage. Usually, once the injury is there, it persists. You can mitigate some of the pain, and there are different approaches to trying to treat it. So for the wrist, for example, recommendations would be to try and keep the wrist moving as much as you can, so mobilizing it a lot as a means of preventing further deterioration or further pain from developing over time. But otherwise, you know, I'm just looking now to try and give you a bit more information as well. They say here, this is from UpToDate.com, for patients with wrist fractures, they recommend supplemental vitamin C that says that which has a low risk and which may be beneficial. Typical dose is 500 milligrams daily, and the duration is taken for 50 days. So that's something else that you might try with the wrist. And that evidence is grade 1B, so meaning that they had a randomized trial to see if this was this helped, and it seemed to help for people with that specific condition. But ultimately, it may require also an assessment done at the rehabilitation centers. They still sometimes have solutions for you with respect to how to manage it, how to build up strength in the wrist again, and how to mitigate some of that pain. There might be medications to take to try and control the pain. But this was interesting in that, again, just reading out the vitamin C recommendation, that's something new that I hadn't realized before, and which is why I like to refer to this website.
And the last call is Dennis in Ottawa. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hi, how are you today?
Good,
fine, thanks.
Good. Reason I'm calling is, long story short, about 3 months ago, I had gone for a physical in regards to employment. So it was done by an independent office.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was blood work, not necessarily blood work, but the standard stuff they would do in the office itself. Anyways, during the process, the nurse technician or whatever asked me if I had diabetes. And to my knowledge, I said, no, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But with the test that they did with the urine in the office, they said, well, your blood sugar is really high. I said, do you mind if I do the finger prick and just confirm it? And he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 10.
Okay.
So he says, I think, you know, do you have a history in the family? And I said, my mom had it. And pretty sure that's what got her in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so as soon as I left her, I made an appointment with my doctor, which is actually this Friday coming up.
Okay.
My question is, I'm 50 years old. I don't smoke. I have a fairly physically active job. And I don't feel anything, obviously. I don't have any symptoms that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. I don't feel anything different. It kind of caught me by surprise. So when I'm going here on Friday, I'm just concerned about, is this something that's reversible if it's still at 10 when she tests again or whatever? Or or is it inevitable that no matter what, just delaying the process, whether it's 2 years or 10 mm-hmm. years, still going to wind up with it?
When they did the test, were you fasting or was this, had you eaten
that
day?
I didn't have to fast, but typically it was the first thing in the morning. I think that the appointment was at 9 a.m. And
right.
I'm not a breakfast person. I don't eat breakfast.
Oh, so you didn't have breakfast and you went to
the only thing I had was a coffee on the way to the doctor's. That was it.
Coffee had sugar in it?
One sugar, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So random blood sugars are not the way to detect diabetes because sugars can shoot up, especially right after consuming, especially if you had sugar in the coffee.
Okay.
So ideally, the testing for determining whether someone has diabetes is a fasting morning blood sugar. Is
okay.
One of the first things. It's a first stage of a test. If that is elevated, if it's above normal, then you
okay.
move on to what's called a 2-hour glucose challenge test. That's where you drink a very sweet soda type of orange drink, and
okay.
then you have a blood test done before you take the drink, and then a blood test 2 hours later, and it measures how well your body has metabolized the sugar and moved the sugar around. And if that's
right.
elevated, if that shows that the sugar levels are elevated after 2 hours, that is diagnostic, depending on the level, can be diagnostic of diabetes or pre-diabetic, something that we call impaired glucose tolerance.
Okay.
Nevertheless, if the sugars are elevated like that, if they are elevated, you do want to treat this as soon as possible because although it you can certainly control diabetes, you can also reverse it depending on a person's weight. Sometimes about 5 or 10 pounds weight loss can make a huge difference.
Okay.
But it's a cumulative disease. That is, the longer it goes untreated, more damage occurs. You don't really realize there's any damage going on until
right.
it actually happens. So I wouldn't depend on that one reading as a diagnosis of anything. You really
okay.
have to have the test done under the appropriate circumstances and then make decisions on the basis of that.
Okay, so the first test you said was what again? Exactly.
Your physician will order a fasting morning blood sugar.
Okay, we have to go. Dennis, good luck. Thanks for coming in,
You're
answering
welcome.
All those questions. Good to see you
good
as
to
always.
See you too.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, that's the Wednesday house call for today. And don't forget health headlines during Maidley in the morning at 10 to 7 every morning.